Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and my special guest today is Todd Seavey. Todd and I were both producers at Fox together on the show Freedom Watch with Judge Napolitano. He's also an author, a ghostwriter for famous people who we cannot name. CV is also famous for an incredible episode on C-SPAN where he got revenge on his evil ex-girlfriend on live TV by saying that most of her ideas were aimed at increasing suffering in the world. CV ripped into his former lover, saying the first thing she wanted to do was get rid of the assault laws against assault so more men get into fights with each other. He accused her of cheating on him and told the story about how she set up a couple together and then seduced the man away so she could hurt the woman. Ugh. CV painted her as a perfect example of how right-wingers can conceal nihilism as terrible as the left. These days, though, Mr. CV rails against feminism and the state, shills for anarcho-capitalism, blogs at toddcv.com, and has a new podcast called CV Perry on Culture. Although I'm hoping he'll soon have a better name than that. Hey, Todd, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me. CV Perry on Culture is at least descriptive. And without going into too much detail about the C-SPAN altercation, I will say the ex-girlfriend has grown older, wiser, settled down, gotten married, moved to another country, and become more libertarian at the same time. So I honestly...
Perhaps you taught her a lesson in the way that she needed. She did said she liked pain, so you definitely inflicted that.
Well, I wish them well.
I just showed the video of you on C-SPAN to my current girlfriend, and she's like, remind me never to work with you ever. That's how you libertarians do your breaking up. But anyways, no, it's hilarious. If you look up political nerds on C-SPAN, breaks up with his ex-girlfriend, you'll find Todd's hilarious video. Todd, let's get started off the bat with the news of the day.
Okay.
Emma Watson gave a speech to the United Nations recently where she asked men to get involved in the discussion about domestic violence. Are you afraid that if that happens, that more men get involved, will be accused of mansplaining?
Well, in the U.S., it's almost inevitable that... If a male gets involved in some subject the feminists are interested in, he'll eventually be accused of being condescending or dominating the conversation. But I will say, if you're addressing a big international audience, as Emma Watson implicitly was by talking to the UN, frankly, the rest of the world is so awful that I figure American and British feminists can't do it too much damage. Most of my complaints about feminism are really about recent, nuanced, negative effects I think it's had on American political discourse. But, you know, if you're fleeing from Pakistani rape gangs, you'd probably like to be rescued by Hermione. So, you know, things could be worse. Speech is sort of a basically late second wave, that is 1970s style, feminist manifesto. And so it does have things in there that both you and I would disagree with, in suggesting that men and women should make exactly the same income and that sort of thing, which, you know, I think if you believe that biologically men and women are different, and you believe in chaos theory and think that small differences can have big differences in consequences and outcomes, then it's unreasonable to think men and women will always make the same income or sort into the same professions at the same rate or wield the same amount of social influence. So I would technically disagree with her on those parts of the speech. But, you know, if a big part of her concern is trying to convince Muslim authoritarians overseas that, you know, women do have souls or that sort of thing, then I suppose she'll probably do more good than harm. So okay. I wouldn't want to complain too much.
I like that. Well, just so I can get an idea of your mindset, you know what I mean? You sort of tend to lean to the right, you say. You kind of rail against lefty libertarians in some respects sometimes. So are you of the mindset that, you know, that from a tribal perspective, from a societal perspective perhaps, that we that it should be a sort of women and children first mentality? Like, if we're on the Titanic, should men sacrifice themselves to protect women and sort of, you know, enforce gender roles in such a manner?
Well, it, much like with market activity, I don't think you really need to enforce traditions. They will sort themselves out and occur naturally.
Do you find that to be a superior moral philosophy?
I would just say it makes Darwinian sense. I mean, men are a dime a dozen in a sense because, you know, one guy could provide sperm cells for the whole village. You don't need lots of men around, and in fact, if you have them, they'll spend a lot of time competing and in ancient times trying to kill each other. Whereas, you know, if you lose women or children, that's the genetic future being destroyed. And I think all of us, male and female, are instinctively inclined to think the women need to be protected, the children need to be protected, and that as long as you have a few big, strong males around, your complement of men is large enough. So, I don't really have a strong position on whether humans should be fighting to overcome that mindset any more than I have a strong position on whether they should be struggling to overcome their startle responses or, enjoyment of watching things explode. I think it's just sort of natural.
I want to interject just for a moment because I want to get back to celebrities and feminism in a moment. But I want to ask you, this is a political question that's going on right now. There's a lot of Senate races happening across the United States. You know, Republicans have a chance to retake the Senate. And one of the things that they are doing it in order to sort of stave off the idea that there's some Republican war on women, one of the things that they're doing is they are advocating for over-the-counter birth control. Now, interesting, right? Very much a libertarian thing that they're taking on, even if it's for the motives of just, you know, sort of having good PR. But I read that Planned Parenthood is actually opposing this push for over-the-counter birth control, and guess why? They're opposing it because they're saying it would make it more expensive. Because guess what? Employers wouldn't be paying for it anymore. So Planned Parenthood is in a position of arguing for demanding that employers should have to pay for birth control because poor women shouldn't have to pay for their own birth control. Does that show to you that the left is more interested in forcing other people to pay for their shit than they are in actually giving women access to birth control and power over themselves?
I think it's part of the century-long tendency toward totalitarian thinking in which everything bad should be illegal and everything good should be subsidized. So in a way, it's not that surprising. I think when people say birth control ought to be covered by insurance via legal mandates, they're really just affirming that they like this thing. Probably if you asked them whether they want arts funding, they would also say yes. You know, if they wanted trees, the tree planting subsidized, they would also say yes. and of course, the beauty of the market, as we were sort of alluding to before with the talk of incomes, is that it just lets the chips fall where they may, and you get to see by people's actions as they trade what they really value and how much. So birth control is a good thing. So is stucco on your cottage if that's what you want. But to figure out how much people actually value these things, you know, I think they have to work for it and trade for it. You'll see where the resources flow in a more honest way than if it's solved by political bickering.
All right. Well, let's go back to the celebrities. I'd like to talk about celebrities and culture with you because you're the culture guy. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Lana Del Rey, you know, famous singer. She does Summertime Sadness, quite a few big hits. And she was quoted recently as saying she doesn't find feminism very interesting. She's more into SpaceX and Tesla and what's going to happen intergalactically. Now, is that the kind of feminism that makes your nerdy little heart go pitter-patter?
Well, let's see. I mean, to the extent she's not a feminist, I guess that's a good thing. But I'm glad she's looking to the future. And I should seize this opportunity to say that I seem to be one of the few people who thought her performance on Saturday Night Live was okay. I was struck by the fact that Twitter erupted with people, including other celebrities, denouncing it as one of the worst performances in the history of Saturday Night Live. But if anybody who's listened to her music would expect her to be kind of mopey and downbeat, I think. I mean, that's what her music sounds like. Were they expecting her to dance around like Britney Spears? Leave Lana Del Rey alone.
Leave Lana Del Rey alone. That's funny. Now, something that we probably shouldn't leave alone that we've got to keep on writing is this lefty actress, Lena Dunham. You know, she said that she gets all pissy when women say they aren't feminists. And then she goes on to make the BS claims about women not making as much an hour on, you know, a dollar for dollar or whatever. Now, what's worse, that she's so stupid or that she's so ugly? Or is it a bit of both?
Geez. Well, okay, actually, let me say that despite the temptation to joke, I actually don't think she's stupid or ugly, and I saw, like, I saw two episodes of Girls, and they were okay. But I'm more annoyed by things like that video promoting Obama she did, where she said, you know,
like the first time.
Your first time should be beautiful and special. Why not make your first time voting a vote to re-elect Barack Obama? And, you know, I just saw that the Republicans did an ad where they likened Obama to a bad boyfriend, and they had a woman talking about how, you know, the relationships, my relationship with him started out okay, but then it turned bad and he didn't fulfill any of his promises. And the left was talking about this ad like it was horrible and condescending, and how dare they talk about the president as if he's a boyfriend to Democratic women. And all I can say is, where was their anger when Lena Dunham was saying, I think of Obama as my first lover?
Good point. Very good point. Wow. This is libertarian infighting or libertarian stuff. Like, this is insular kind of discussion. Can you tell me, what was your take on seeing the feminist Kathy Reisenwitz say that she's leaving the liberty movement?
I wish her luck with her new career. It sounds like she's going to spend less time on politics and more time working on a real job. But I do think she was philosophically mistaken in some of her unique claims. And maybe more important than whether or not she was philosophically mistaken is that I think her approach to libertarianism was really dangerous and corrosive to libertarianism as a philosophy and a movement. And the main reason is, I think any time a libertarian or a left libertarian concedes too much to the left, it's dangerous. But, you know, there are some things the left has right. One thing they don't have right, I would say, is egalitarianism. That's an incredibly dangerous thing to concede. As I was suggesting earlier with the comments about income level and how, you know, the market should sort that out and not a fiat declaration that everyone will have an equal income. With Kathy Reisenwitz's constant talk of privilege as a bad thing and something we must all combat, she's basically implicitly making the assumption that if we lived in a fully moral world, no one would be better off than anyone else. You know, not only through legal fiat, but happenstance and decisions made in the market and the consequences of their own actions. So, you know, anyone who's smarter should feel guilty about it. Anyone who's, you know, taller should feel guilty about it. Anyone stronger should feel guilty about it. That's sort of the underlying assumption of all of that privilege checking talk. You know, and one of the most dangerous things a market advocate could ever do is say the mistakes of history and all of happenstance should properly be corrected on the backs of the current generation. That obviously leads to massive redistributive thinking, affirmative action, you know, feminism by legal decree in all things, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if she had spent a few more years in political circles if she had announced that she's not a libertarian after all.
Interesting. Well, so you know, that's
dangerous.
That's a very nice, nuanced opinion on that one. I appreciate your thoughts on that. So, let's talk about you, Todd. Tell me about your new podcast.
Oh. Gerard Perry, who is sort of a paleo libertarian, who started out mainly interested in immigration, which he still blogs about at his blog American Rattlesnake, and I were part of a clique of anarcho-capitalists here in New York City. I should say that the past few years getting to know some of these people is really the first time I've ever known a whole bunch of anarcho-capitalists. I went like 2 decades thinking that, you know, there were so few, there was no point in even trying to form a community of them, but things are improving in some ways. So our friend Matt Brandenburg, another anarcho-capitalist, and unlike me and Gerard, a mild-mannered Unitarian, said that he wanted to get the two of us together to discuss pop culture things for the most part from a libertarian perspective. And for the most part, we've been talking about movies, and then once in a while we'll throw in some political events like Ferguson, and did a few videos and then moved to audio because audio podcasts people seem to tolerate at greater length than they do videos.
You've only got a few minutes really to hold people's attention on video. So I'm going to ask you a question first, and then I'm going to give my answer, and I'll ask it in such a way so that you can think about it for a second, because I want to put you on the spot. I know it may take you a minute to remember it, so I'll tell mine first. But I wanted to ask you, what was one of your favorite memories of our time together on Freedom Watch? And it doesn't have to be me and you specifically. It could be your favorite memory on Freedom Watch. And I'll tell you mine. Mine was actually, my favorite moment was when you described yourself to me as a libertarian neocon. And I was like, I was on my whole, you know, truth is treason in the empire of lies, Ron Paul, you know, kick. And it was sort of like, you know, neocons are the enemy. And I remember you were kind of like, no, you know, they're more like our cousins, you know, they're more like our feuding cousins. And I was like, no, I thought they're the evil. They're like Democrats. And you really educated me on sort of what libertarians and neoconservatives have in common, which they do have quite a bit in common in economics in such a way, just the major differences, of course, being on foreign policy. But I remember, you know, you really shocked my senses when you said that, and you described yourself as an anarchist. You talk about how, you know, you don't believe that there was you don't believe in borders, like, right, this nationalistic sense of borders. And so to you, you know, toppling evil regimes around the world is a good thing because, you know, screw them anyway. You know, there's no such thing as national sovereignty in a sense. And so these kinds of ideas really shook me up and forced me to rethink some of my thoughts, you know, because I sort of leaned sort of anarchist as well. So I really appreciated that. You know, that's not necessarily a Freedom Watch, you know, show related memory, just as much as it is one of you and me. But while we were on the show, you really opened up my eyes to a lot of new ideas and forced me to reconsider my radicalism in a way that I thought was less radical, but was actually more radical. So now I find myself sitting in a hole all by myself, and I have no friends, Todd. Because...
Oh no.
No, I'm kidding. Because it's you know, it's very unique. I think that sort of. There became an aspect of the Ron Paul movement that became very unilaterally minded. You know, everything Ron Paul says is the gospel and the truth. It became what sometimes we call them the Paulistinians or the Paultardians, you know, and if you're really being mean. But, you know, I mean, I still love Ron Paul, so I like a lot of what he has to say, but I find myself disagreeing with him sometimes, and that's okay. So, anyways, I'd be interested in what some of your favorite memories might have been.
Well, let's see. I should say just briefly before responding to some of what you just said that I don't know if it's my favorite moment, but one that springs quickly to mind is meeting Sarah Palin. Although she's a little zany, I can understand why people find her immediately charming and pleasant. And even though I was just one of several staffers around her, she took the time to sort of run over to me and say, "Oh, I've got a great idea for a show. You should do one that's just a whole hour dedicated to teaching the Constitution to children." And it was just, you know, nice that, and she suggested maybe a book spinoff or something as well. But, you know, it's nice that she cared enough to run over and offer her suggestion. She was quite charming. Unfortunately, I think it might have been you who took the photo of me standing next to Palin. And just because of the the lighting in the studio, basically no one who sees that photo
thinks that she's there.
thinks it's real. They think I'm standing next to a mannequin
like
or something.
Right, they think that she's a wax figure or something like that.
It's photoshopped, which is unfortunate, but I still like the photo. And I'm not saying she should necessarily be president, but I like the photo. But on the earlier point, yeah, it's funny in the dialectical synthesis process. I guess you know you started out much more a textbook Ron Paul fan, and I was a bit more neoconservative. Both of us sort of anarcho-capitalist underneath, and then oddly enough, instead of meeting in the middle, to some degree, it's almost like we switched positions because you know I've seen other libertarians online criticizing you for saying nice things about the military and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and I think just out of age and impatience and exhaustion have kind of reached the point where I feel like you know we should just never give the state an inch, and that furthermore humanity might have a fundamental problem with enjoying sorting itself into violent bands. That might be sort of its default mode of social organization. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should get more comfortable with ignoring left and right, and to some degree even ignoring the state-non-state distinction, and comfortably saying, I'm opposed to street gangs, governments, police departments, militaries, welfare states, virtue enforcers in Saudi Arabia, rapists and the whole nine yards, just violence in general, rather than trying to pick and choose when to deploy violence. And certainly the current foreign policy situation is enough to make a lot of people, I think, want to you know just throw up their hands and say, forget it, we should stop with the military interventions. Not so much because the ISIS battle or what have you is protracted and futile, as that it's just so confusing. I mean, can anyone keep track of all these factions? Does anyone believe that the government is actually keeping track of them all? I think we may have reached the point where it's just sort of absurd and we should stay home.
Agreed.
All right, well, Todd, where can people go to find out more about your show?
If you go to podbean.com and then search for CVSEAVEY, my last name, you'll find us. For whatever I'm up to right now, you can go to toddcv.com. And usually my right-hand margin will tell you about upcoming events. And if my sore throat clears up, I should be on stage on Saturday, October 4th, at People's Improv as part of an electoral dysfunction political panel, mostly surrounded by lefties, talking about the events of the week, a sort of comedic onstage McLaughlin group, as it were. And there'll be other random stuff in the future. So follow me on Twitter and check out ToddCV.com.
Excellent, Todd Seavey. That's SEAVEY. Todd, Todd, ToddCV.com. Todd, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, have a great day.